Peace, love, and harmony, family. Welcome back to another episode of Talk Tuesday. I am your host, B Harmony, and as always, your support means the absolute world to me. I am definitely thankful that you guys are still out there tuning in every Tuesday or whatever day it is that you're listening. You know, I'm happy that you're here. And if it is a Tuesday when you happen to be catching this brand new release, then let's go ahead and get to talking. And even if it's not a Tuesday, it's definitely okay because I'm still going to talk to you no matter what day it is that you are listening. Thank you. Make sure that you're sharing this podcast, this episode at the end if you really like it. Have conversations and open up. The point of me making this these podcasts is so that you can get a different perspective. The point of Harmony Politics is so that you can step outside of yourself and come to some type of harmonic conclusion, because it's very easy for us all to get caught up in our own opinions, ideologies, and views and think that we're so right in everything that we say that we can't even see someone else's perspective or acknowledge someone else's point or even put ourselves in them in their shoes in order to be empathetic or sympathize with the other side. And for this week's episode, I definitely want to talk about that part alone, just being able to empathize and put yourself in other people's shoes. So for this week's episode, we are definitely talking about social injustices. Specifically, this is George Floyd Part 2. Now, you guys remember a while back, I did an episode on George Floyd. And if you don't remember and you're not able to find it, then you definitely can scroll down to previous seasons and you'll see the episode that I'm talking about. But for this episode, I just want to break down what social justice and injustice looks like and what is the role of our actual criminal justice department. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. You know, for me, this is more of a serious episode for me. It's not so much based on research, but really on what's going on in my heart and how I feel. Because right now, with the way that the trial has been going and the fact that there was even a trial is so upsetting to me that I've been emotional all week about it. And the 45 people who testified, the prosecution, the defense, you know, it's insane what's been going on. But before I really get into that, let's talk about social injustices and social justice. So the definition of social justice is justice in terms of the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. And as I was reading that definition, you know, it came to my mind that if you don't have wealth, then by default, there are certain opportunities that you will never be privy to because you're not in that circle. We all know the saying, you know, you hang out with 5 millionaires, you become the 6th. You are the crowd that you keep. And as much as I like to, you know, go away from the traditional sayings and norms, there's very much truth in that saying. And that applies to this social justice too. You know, if you are wealthy or affluent, then there are certain opportunities and privileges that you have within a society that other people do not have access to. And this specifically relates to minorities in this country. Not all minorities are poor or, you know, living in a low-income, strict, poverty-stricken area. But for the most part, you know, when it comes to the actual wealth gap, your poor-stricken areas are the ones who suffer the most from the most social injustices. So by definition, if social justice is wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society, what are the interrelated principles was my next thought that I had. And I found it hard, like I researched this, of course, but for my own perspective, I found it hard to really think of what do I see as the interrelated principles when the definition is clear in itself: wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. We all know society is not even. Things are not even. You're not born with a fair slate. You know, no one raises themselves. Everyone is raised by somebody. So if my family is not business savvy, then chances are I'm not going to be business savvy growing up. So of course, someone has to come and break the curse and break the cycle. It's called breaking generational cycles, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about being in a position of wealth so that you can have opportunity and privileges. And we all know that there's so many different minorities who are suffering in this area. So when I started to dig deeper on interrelated principles, I came up with 4 principles that I felt like, you know, really embody what social justice is. So the first one is equity. The second one is access. The third one is participation. And the last one is going to be rights. And all of these 4 qualities that I found, or principles, I'm sorry, all of these 4 principles that I found to go with social justices really just hit me hard, because thinking about this George Floyd trial, is there really social justice in this trial, or is this a social injustice? So those interrelated principles that I just listed, equity, access, participation, and rights, all of those do not apply to specific demographics in this country, your African Americans and your Hispanic communities. I can remember hearing things when I was growing up, like, oh, you're born black, you already are at a disadvantage, or oh, you're Hispanic, you already are at a disadvantage. Look at even from the smallest scale on our school systems, the fact that when you take the SATs or ACTs, certain demographics test higher than other demographics. Why is that? Because of the opportunities and privileges that you're afforded. You know what I'm saying? So when we look at it from that perspective, it's actually not hard to understand that this is the one of the biggest social injustices that I've ever seen in my lifetime. Because honestly, without equity, blacks have no access. And without rights, we don't participate. Let me say that again in case you guys missed it. Let me take out the word black, because we're speaking on George Floyd and he is the black male. But let me just put this as people. Without equity, people have no access. And without rights, people don't participate. Now, those are the four interrelated principles to social injustice: equity, access, participation, and rights. Now, if you have no equity, what access do you really have? Now, you can work hard to obtain equity, right? And you can fight your way to get access to those opportunities and privileges that you never had before, but that's an uphill battle. Most people are not born with equity. They don't even understand what equity is. I myself am learning about this, so I'm speaking from my own personal perspective. I can only speak for myself, so if you're already offended, you know, don't skip this podcast. Go ahead and stay tuned, because it's all going to come right back around, all right? Now, the second part is, without rights, we don't participate. Okay, if I have no rights in a society, then why would I participate with anything the society has? Take it a step further. The Constitution was made and there was an entire demographic of people who were purposely left out. Now, if I never had rights originally, then why would I participate? Not only did I not have rights originally, but the original rights that I quote unquote should have or feel like I should have, there's actually clauses that are written in there against me to make sure that I have no rights. So if I have no rights, what is the point of participation? If I have no right to be at a party, I'm not going to go to the party and participate. It doesn't make sense. You know, I'm not going to enjoy it. No one else is going to enjoy it because I'm not even supposed to be there. So what more about social justices? When we think of social justices, we think of atrocities or, you know, marches that are for women empowerment and things like that. But think about it from the actual definition, social. What is social? Social comes from the root word society. So we're talking about society justice. What does society view as justice or injustice? And by the very definition, without wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society, how can you have justice? And for me, I'm watching this Derek Chauvin murder trial. I'm sorry, reduced to manslaughter. I'm watching this trial and I'm trying to figure out, how can society say that they are just when we are having a trial for what everyone knows that they saw? He knelt on his neck for 9 minutes and 26 seconds until he died. It's crazy to me. It doesn't make sense. But that's how far society is willing to go. That's how far there's a difference in viewpoints. Now, of course, I can't talk about social justice without talking about social injustice. And the definition of this is, social injustice occurs in a situation where the equals are treated unequally and the unequal is treated equally. Now, this definition to me, I had to read actually a couple times in order to really just correlate the two between social injustice and this man, Derek Chauvin. And the part that stuck out to me was the fact that the unequal is treated equally and the equals are treated unequally. Okay, who is the one who defines who's unequal and who's equal? By very definition, it's society, right? So who are those people in society? Well, that's going back again to the wealth gap that we have. There are certain rules that apply up here, but they don't apply over here. Look at the legalization of marijuana. An African-American kid who's smoking marijuana or caught with marijuana has a much harsher sentence than that of a Caucasian kid or another race who's not a minority in the country. You know what I'm saying? So there's already this injustice that's happening. So when I think about the definition of unequal, the unequal is treated equally, I think about Derek Chauvin and how he is so unequal to not only himself or his police counterpart partners and, you know, co-workers, but to society as a whole, but he is treated equally. Now, I'm not saying that we should try him ourselves, because that's not a democracy. We live in a democracy. There's rules in place, so that way we make sure that, you know, he's tried by the court and not of public opinion. But we all know public opinion should be the very definition of what our justice system is based on. Now, I know that that's a slippery slope, because it's two sides to every coin. But in something like this, where a man is dead because somebody kneeled on his neck for 9 minutes and 26 seconds, and you didn't get off until the paramedics arrived and told you to get off, I just cannot understand that. And this is a huge injustice in the country. It's the balance between individuals and society. How can we as individuals support a society that infringes upon one group's rights? And that's minorities. You either have or you have not. And for those of us who have not, our rights are constantly being infringed upon, and we're just supposed to sit down and take it. Now, I don't agree with the looting and the rioting, but I understand that that is the only outcry that people have to get the government to pay attention. Why are so many people bad? Why is there riots that are popping up all over the country in the United States behind this man, George Floyd, in the gruesome manner in which he was killed? There's got to be a reason, right? So it's like we have to take a look at society, at our whole entire criminal justice system, because at this point, it's not just a society issue, but it's even deeper than that. It's a policy and procedure issue. We're making decisions based off of a document that is moot, in my opinion. And if you don't know what moot means, it means null and void. Go ahead and look it up. It means it no longer matters. You know, it's dead. It's a dead document. We're making decisions based off of a constitution that was made back in how many years ago? There's no way the forefathers could have seen all of the innovations, the technological advances that we have in this country. There's no way. So if we're basing our opinions and ideas on this document that started as a way to ratify and bring together states, how are we really saying that we've progressed and we've advanced in society? It doesn't make sense to me. And yet alone the criminal justice system, come on. The purpose of the criminal justice system is to, well, obviously create laws, right? Somebody's got to enforce them. So who are those? Your police officers, your fire department, public servants, different sectors of government, you know? Then you have your court system, civil, criminal, right? Now you have the correctional system. And the correctional system and law enforcement work hand in hand together to make sure that the criminal justice systems operate. The criminal justice system is supposed to operate at such a level that it enforces laws and prevents future crimes. But how does the criminal justice system work when the very people who are supposed to be protecting and serving the community are the ones who are on trial or are the ones who are committing these atrocities? Now, I'm not saying that every police officer is a bad guy. No, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that, is there such thing as common sense where, you know, I might have been kneeing on this guy's neck for so long, it's probably time for me to get up. And I feel like Derek Chauvin knew that. That's why he's got on the stand and pled the fifth. Because what was going to be the first question the prosecution asked him? Why were you on his neck so long? How do you justify that? Like, tell me, how do you justify that? For 9 minutes and 26 seconds. At one point, there was not even any more talking from George Floyd, but you're still on his neck. You're having conversations with bystanders while you're still on his neck. So what do you do in a system where the person who's supposed to protect the system is the one who's completely disobeying it? This kind of reminds me of the whole reason why criminal justice started. I remember being in my undergrad and learning about how the criminal justice came to part and, you know, why it started in the first place. And I remember reading, it was about basically during the American Revolution, the British were actually hanging its own citizens for committing crimes against the British. And in order to justify that, they created, you know, the criminal justice system. They created courts and rules and laws to justify hanging its own citizens. So fast forward to all of these years later, we still have the same type of system in place, quote unquote, that justifies killing and locking up, imprisoning its own citizens. Look at how many black people make up the jails. If you don't know this information, go and watch this documentary called 13. It's amazing. Go ahead and go watch that. It's on Netflix right now, probably Hulu and Amazon Prime. But it's justifying locking up majority of its citizens. Although black and African American people make up a small percentage of the earth, of not the earth, of the United States of America, we make up the most in prison, and then closely followed by Hispanics, right? So how is the justification of the criminal justice system different from the British? Hanging its own citizens, locking up a certain demographic of people. Some would say it's a form of population control. I say it's just downright racism and systematic oppression. Systematic oppression stems from criminal justice. When's the last time you heard about civil systematic oppression? I'll wait. Go ahead and think about it. I know it's hard to come up with something, right? I struggle with that myself too. Criminal justice and the criminal justice system is where we see the biggest disconnect in our society. You have people who believe in social justices, you have people who believe in social injustices, and you have groups who don't even acknowledge that an injustice took place, and it's so baffling. I want you guys to hear this clip and tell me what you think. Of course, I'm talking about the clip that went viral from Chris Cumio, who's a CNN political respondent. So let's take a listen.
So many others. You're here, people. What are you gonna do when you see these shootings? You know what you're gonna do at George Floyd.
Did you hear about him?
At Dante Wright.
Did you hear about him?
That 13-year-old Adam, you know he was a gangbanger. Why do that? Because you want to make the problem them. Takes the onus off the idea that you're wrong about policing not needing to change. Forget that police are trained to deal with non-compliance with force that is not lethal. Hey, comply or die. Yeah, I mean. And you know what the answer is? You really do. You don't like it. I don't like it. It scares me. Shootings? Gun laws? Access to weapons? Oh, you? I know when they'll change. Your kids start getting killed? White people's kids start getting killed? Smoking that doobie that's actually legal probably in your state now, but they don't know what it was, and then the kid runs and it pop, 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 pop. Cop was justified. Why'd you run? Oh, he had a baseball game tonight. Oh, a white kid. Oh, big family. That house over there. Those start piling up. What is going on with these police? Oh, what? Maybe we shouldn't even have police. That kind of mania, that kind of madness, that'll be you. That'll be the majority, because it's your people. See? Now, black people start getting all guns, forming militias, protect themselves. Can't trust deep state. Hoo-hoo. You'll see a wave of change in access and accountability. We saw it in the 60s. That's when it changes, because that's when it's you.
And as much as it pains me to agree with him, it does. It only pains me for the simple fact that I don't want anyone to die unjustly. Whether you're black, white, blue, brown, green, yellow, whatever color you identify yourself as, I don't think that anyone should unjustly be killed by law enforcement, especially with a knee on their neck. And he's not wrong. When he's talking about the 1960s and how blacks brought that up, let's talk about that really briefly. So we're talking about the Black Panther movement started by Huey Newton, right? And in the 1960s, there was a group of about 40 or 30 black people who decided to protest and march, and they actually had guns on them, loaded guns out with legal permits and everything else. But of course, politicians saw that as a problem and it frightened them. And specifically at the time, Governor Ronald Reagan decided that this is something that we need to do to stop black people from having these, you know, guns and things like that, because of the different atrocities in the world that were going on, especially in the 1960s. It was frightening to see that, okay, we're killing these black people by way of police officers, and the police officers getting away with it. Now they have guns, and they're right in to have their guns. There's nothing that we can do about it. So what can we do to stop that? So Governor Ronald Reagan spearheaded a law, and it's called the Mulford Act, and it was passed in California in 1960. And basically what the Mulford Act did was it prohibited open carrying of loaded firearms in the state of California, which set a precedent so that California is now one of the hardest states to get a gun in, especially an open carry gun, right? So that passed in 1967. Now, a lot of people think, oh, well, the NRA, you know, they were for it and they agreed. Actually, in the 1960s, the NRA was working with the government and with Ronald Reagan. So that way, the black people weren't allowed to have these open guns and carry them around, especially loaded ones. You know, that's something that the NRA never embraced, is African Americans having guns. And, you know, I get it. If I was the NRA and I see a group of people who are so oppressed by this country, who are sick and tired of being sick and tired, gunned down, driving while black, walking while black, jogging while black, in your home sleeping while black, I understand why they would want to stop a certain group of people from having guns. But does that make it right? Is that a social justice or a social injustice? Well, I guess it would depend on who you're talking to, right? That's the entire point of this episode, is to get you thinking. It shouldn't depend on who you're talking to or what group or class or wealth that you're talking to. It should be the same across the board. We live in a state where it's supposed to be pure equality, but we know that that's not true. Think about the NRA right now and what they believe. Their beliefs stem from African Americans who felt like they needed protection from a corrupt government. Why does the NRA want guns? Think about it. Some of those same principles transcend from the Black Panther movement. But that's another conversation and definitely another podcast. This is about George Floyd. The point of this whole clip and the brief history lesson is to let you guys know that depending on who's talking, that's how the narrative is going to be created. Just listen to this from the trial today, April 19th. Listen to this, what the prosecution said, and it really stood out to me, and you know, it brought tears to my eyes, not only because this is just a tragedy that we even have to have a Derek Chauvin trial, but just the fact that these words were powerful. It says, and I quote, "You are told, for example," he's speaking to the jury, right? So he's speaking to the jury in closing statements. Here we go. "You are told, for example, that Mr. Floyd died. That Mr. Floyd died because his heart was too big. You heard that testimony. And now, having seen all of the evidence and having heard of the evidence, you know that the truth of the matter of fact is that the reason George Floyd is dead is because Mr. Chauvin's heart was too small." And I couldn't agree more. They are saying that George Floyd died because his heart was too big. He had drugs in his system. There was carbon monoxide poisoning from the car that they can't say if it was on or off the entire time. All of this boils down to what he said. Mr. Chauvin's heart was too small, that he never got his knee off of his neck. You heard expert testimony. You've seen witnesses of all demographics, white, black, everything. And it's still an atrocity, and yet we still have to go through this quote-unquote criminal justice system. I don't have faith in the criminal justice system. Myself, along with many other African Americans, we're hopeful. We want to see change. We would love to see, you know, him get Derek Chauvin, get the verdict that he deserves, but I'm not hopeful for it, and it frightens me to live in a country where we can watch someone kneel on someone's neck and he can still possibly get away with it. Now, by the time this airs, or if you're going back and listening, I don't know what the result will be, but at this time the jury is out for deliberation, and I can only speak on things that happened up until this point. So please make sure that you understand that. I don't want you writing into me saying he was found not guilty or he was already found guilty. This is April 19th. There is no verdict as of right now. Okay, you guys? I am so worried about the future of this country, not only for myself, but for my brothers and sisters, for my fellow Harmonites out there, for those of us who think outside the box and who think outside of what we're told, and we ask questions back. What type of world are we moving into if someone can have their knee on someone's neck for 9 minutes and 20 seconds and possibly get a not guilty verdict? I really pray that we get the verdict that everyone in this country can pretty much agree on, a guilty verdict. But if not, I pray that we all choose the latter, because rioting and looting, unfortunately, I know that it's an outcry and it's angry, and that's our only way to show we're upset. But we have got to implement some type of policy and procedure change if the outcome doesn't come. But what about all the other cases who are not as public as George Floyd, who happen in towns where we don't even know the names of it, and these social injustices are happening? It's an uphill battle, but it needs to come from within. The only way that things are going to change is from a policy and procedural standpoint. After George Floyd's death, you know, it sparked all of these different police reforms and department reviews, and we're going to start focusing on crisis communication, community engagement, and things like that. But how long do we have to implement these new police programs in order to gain the community's trust back, especially a community who has never trusted the police? Because of its origins, before they were the police, they were the slave catchers, slave patrol. That was their job. So how many years does it take to undo the damage after generation after generation? There's still black fathers to this day who have to have conversations with their black sons about how to talk to the police officers. There's still black women in the world who have to talk to their black children about how to conduct yourself when you're in the presence of quote unquote others, you know? And it's sad that we have to do this, because we quote unquote live in a free world, right? I'm just so disgusted with America, and I'm so disgusted with criminal justice, and I'm so disgusted with politics right now that I just can't even deal with it. And I had to come to you guys and talk to you, because I'm human just like you guys. I know I love to do my research, and I know I love to talk to you guys about politics, but this is weighing on my heart so heavy. I have brothers, I have a father, I have uncles, I have cousins who are black men, and I can only imagine the pain that I would be in if I was to see them killed in this manner. We have got to do better as a country. We have to hold each other accountable. I don't know what the solution is. I'm just here talking to you guys on this Tuesday just because, you know, this is the only way that I'm able to get my voice out there. I want you guys to write into me like you've been doing. Thank you guys who are doing that. Tell me what you guys think about it. In other parts of the country, I would love to hear from you guys. Do these type of atrocities happen in your community? Do they happen where you're from? We got Malta on the list. We got Ireland, Mexico, Nigeria, Germany, South Africa, Australia, the Netherlands, Kuwait, Portugal, Denmark, Romania. You guys, write into me. I really want to know, like, how is your country watching this George Floyd trial, and how are things there? What's the temperature there? Because I can only Google so much and research so much. I would love to hear feedback about this. So thank you guys for listening to me talk and just, you know, being completely open with you guys. You know, it's hard when you do podcasts because you want to put on this certain image, or you want to make sure that you're sticking to these type of topics because that's your lane. But sometimes you just have to speak from the heart. And for this George Floyd and Derek Chauvin trial, you know, I just have to speak from the heart and let you guys know exactly where I stand with that. And I think that if you are a person of minority, or even if you're not a person of minority, if you have no criminal record, then by all means, it is your Second Amendment right to bear arms, and you ought to be bearing arms. I'd rather you guys have a gun and not need it than need it and not have it. You understand what I'm saying? So make sure that we're staying safe out here. Make sure that we're staying smart, aware, and make sure that we're staying tapped into Harmony Politics. Peace and love, you guys. Since this episode has aired, Derek Chauvin has been found guilty of all three counts as of April 20th. Thank you.